The following is a production of DallasCowboys.com and the Dallas Cowboys Football Club.
How about them Cowboys?
Yeah! Go Cowboys!
This is Talkin' Cowboys. Streaming live from the Dallas Cowboys World Headquarters at the Star in Frisco.
Touchdown!
Parsons has sacked it.
Prescott keeps it, and he bangs it into the touchdown.
And now your hosts, Isaiah Standback, Nick Harris, John Mashoda, and Kyle Yeomans.
It's a wonderful Wednesday edition of Talking Cowboys presented by Black Rifle Coffee Company. We are live from the Star in Frisco, Texas, in the SWBC studios. It is week 17 of the NFL season. The Dallas Cowboys facing the Detroit Lions coming up on Saturday. We've got Isaiah Standback, John Mashoda, back in the building today, Mr. Nick Harris.
Yeah, barely back in the building, but I'm
barely.
Here.
You got
I'm
it.
Here. My flight landed at 8:18, but I am here, 9 a.m., ready to go. Let's
to
get it.
Dedication.
Copper. Yep. I see you.
Sounds like
that
you've had
chopper.
Your black rifle this morning, too.
I haven't. I'm just ready to go.
You're just excited to talk about this?
He missed the show
yesterday.
I'm going
to hit black rifle after, though, for sure.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Nice.
He felt left out yesterday.
Nice little plug. I'm getting better at this.
Chris Beam in the back. I'm Kyle Yeomans. Glad you're with us. All right, Nick, we haven't heard your thoughts on the Miami loss 22-20 yet. You were there. What happened?
Yeah, I think if we remember back to last week, I was not expecting this defense to play as well as it did on Sunday in Miami. I think that was probably the biggest surprise. Honestly, the run defense was great. It was pretty damn good, limiting Mostert and Achan to the yardage that they had. If you told me going in that was going to be the case, you were only going to limit that Dolphins offense to one touchdown. You're going to force them into some long field goal situations with a kicker that had missed seven straight 50-plus yard field goals going into that game. Then I would have told you, oh, okay, this Cowboys team, they figured this out. But that second and third quarter, man, not being able to get anything going offensively. Obviously, the fumble on the goal line from Hunter Lipke, it's very tough.
You want to hit it?
Very tough stuff.
You want to talk about it?
Yeah, unfortunately, let's pull the Band-Aid.
This is a support group.
You know, I think there's probably half blame on both sides between Dak and Lipke. I mean, that's a handoff that you got to practice throughout the week, and they haven't had that practice throughout the year. Obviously, he had only had six touches coming into the game. Go ahead. I'll let you touch on it.
So, going back, how long do you think Hunter Lipke's been playing the running back / fullback position in his life?
His whole life.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there's certain just mechanics, operation, per se, that just happen every single time, meaning like arm up, arm down with a little clamping motion, right?
Yep.
Okay. He had no bottom arm. The bottom arm was non-existent.
The ball came high.
We talked about it in one of our breaks on yesterday's show about the mesh of, you know, when you do like the read option, like the polling. I wonder if he thought that Dak was going to pull.
Yeah, I just don't understand why they would pull right there.
Regardless,
why that would be an option.
There's no pull. It was bad mechanics. He didn't have a bottom arm. There was no bottom bar.
It was more of like up
this.
In front.
He was like this.
Yeah.
So Dak put the ball rather high, low, it doesn't matter. Like that's what the whole purpose
there's no base.
There. There's no base. There's no bottom shelf. Right? So the ball's gonna come straight out. It doesn't matter who you are. So that's just, and he was anxious.
Yeah.
That's what it really comes down to. He was anxious and he lost his mechanics. And unfortunately, the Cowboys had to pay for it.
Four touches on the first drive, though. Like, whenever he lined up at the goal line, I was like, oh my God, this
here
is it.
Is.
This is my moment.
This is it. This is the time, my moment.
This is the top of the mountain. And then we just came crashing down.
Yeah.
The boulder came down the mountain and hit me in
Indiana
the face.
Indiana Jones boulder?
Yeah, it was so bad. But
Nick's running down the mountain.
It's just going to clamp me. But 10-point swing right out of the gates. Yeah. I mean, when that happened and they came down and kicked a field goal, and they had two opportunities to have some big shots. Tyreek dropped the one that would have been a 93-yard touchdown, and then Waddle came back with the 50-yarder. I was just worried that defense was going to get killed over the top all game, and then that didn't happen. The defense held up, and obviously I have to give credit to that unit for being able to do that against an offense like that, but, man, the offense, they're going to have to come to play in all four quarters. The third quarter has been the quarter that has killed them the most this season, but it was stacked with the second quarter this season, or this past week. So, We'll see against Detroit. Obviously, a really good opportunity to bounce back. We'll dive into it today. Going back home against a quality NFC opponent, I think there's still time to right this ship before the playoffs start. But, man, the way Tampa Bay played this past weekend, this wild card round isn't becoming such an afterthought anymore. So they've stacked four wins in a row. I think that's going to be probably what we look at here in a couple weeks. But, yeah.
What do you think the key is to, on the teams you've been on, when to play well coming out of halftime? Is there anything that you've noticed? Because, you know, on the outside, there's a lot of the play, you know, halftime speech.
And halftime like, adjustments and all sorts of
being
stuff.
Being honest with you, man, there's substantially more talk on outside looking in than there ever is on the inside.
Yeah.
Like, you really got 8 minutes in there.
Yeah, it's quick.
Isaiah's getting an Uncrustable.
Seriously, literally, you walk in the locker
tape
room,
job and an Uncrustable.
You walk in the locker room, you throw your helmet in your locker for a hot second, you go use the bathroom, you sit down, you grab a drink. Coach runs in there. Literally, the whole coaching staff runs into the locker room. They get in front of the board. They're like, "All right, boys, listen up. All right, this is what's going on. Boom, boom." And they hit on a couple points, and then it's like they have to run out and get back to the booth. Like, it's literally no time. So, I mean, yeah, you address the key points, but it's not like you're sitting there having a whole team meeting, you know what I'm saying, for a half hour. Like, it's not that much time. They're going to come down. They're going to tell you exactly what's been going on. All right, the changes that need to happen really, really quick, and then, like, it's gone. And then you come out and you try to execute better. Like, that's – there's more – substantially more talk on the outside looking in. It's just – on the inside, you're playing, man.
Yeah.
You're playing. You recognize, hey, things aren't going our way. We got to make some changes. But it's not like a come-to-Jesus meeting where you have to – you know, everybody's sitting there with their kumbaya and at halftime.
Would it be comparable to, like, in-between drives, having conversations with your coaches on the sideline? I mean, it's the same thing, basically. I would assume so.
There's more time – in the game.
That's what I'm saying.
There's more information that's conveyed in between drives than there ever is at halftime.
I do think it's funny because I think on the outside you look at it as it's like the movies, you know, it's like any given Sunday. It's like you're picturing almost like Mike McCarthy's the only one talking to the entire team. The Niners, I want to say it was last season. I think it was last season during a preseason game, they let one of our writers at The Athletic go in the locker room. Now the writer could only write about certain things, but to your point, it was a lot about how people are broken off into groups. It's not like this one big, like, message, rah-rah, you know, speech in the middle of the locker room type thing. Like, I think that maybe you see in TV shows and movies.
Everybody take a knee.
Right.
Like, you get the whiteboard, and then there's, like, a soft music underline.
Literally, the coaches
are... Is it the same for you in college, too? Same deal, where you break off like that, or... Because it's a longer halftime. That's the reason I ask.
I feel like college was more deliberate in terms of the team.
Okay.
But then you're like the OC comes, you know, your D coordinator takes the team. They mention a couple of things that you need to hit on. And then it's like, okay, get with your position groups. And like your position coach comes over to your locker. It's like, all right, look, this is what we're looking at. This is what we need to do. And then they're gone. But like in NFL, it's quick. Literally, by the time you come away from the doggone urinal and come back to your locker, you can see the coaching staff literally running in. Like they're running in. They're like, okay. And they're like, hurry up. And like, everybody knows they only have a hot second to get across their message. So they get everybody's attention real quick. And they're like, okay. And they write their little quick notes on the board. They tell everybody what to do. And they're like, all right. And then they're running back out the door trying to get back up to the doggone booth.
Interesting. Yeah, because you've got moments with your position coach. And a lot of times those position coaches are on the sideline. So you'll probably get a word with them as you're on your way in or on your way out. Whenever you're going in the locker room. But then you've got the coordinators and some of those other coaches that see it from a different angle than you do, and they have a different perspective.
Correct.
And so maybe that's the one time you get the chance to hear that different perspective. It's interesting to think about because teams, there are first half and second half teams in any level of the sport. And so far the Cowboys, at least in terms of the first quarter, have been great. In terms of the fourth quarter, for the most part, have been pretty darn good. Third quarter has been where they've been really missing that same level of emphasis.
I think that just comes from the coaches' adjustments. Some coaches are better at not only attaining knowledge in that first half, but then being able to quickly convey that information and those changes that need to take place to your team.
Mm-hmm.
And then your team being able to make those alterations and execute them on the field in the second half. I think that's the more important aspect. And that's not to say that, you know, well, it is to say some coaches are better communicators than others, and then the team has to receive it and actually go out there and apply it. Now, there's different levels of changes, right? There's, hey, you know, maybe the coach in the booth saw something that everybody else on the field didn't see. It's like, hey, you know, make sure you shorten your split down on this, or make sure that you don't overset, you know, if you're a tackle. Like, just little, you know, cues and pointers here and there that might that might pay huge dividends in that second half, but it's not a overtaking. It's not a, hey, we're gonna change everything that we're doing now. It's just, that's not what it is.
Speaking of some changes, I just want to throw this out there because we didn't talk about it yesterday to you guys. I really liked when they won the toss. They took the ball just as a kind of a change up. What did you guys think of that?
I think in that game you had to.
I think it's a situational basis.
And I'm doing it against the Niners, too. I don't think they've had the ball once to start the game in any of those last three Niners games. There's just something about getting a lead with this particular team. I'm not saying, like, Mike McCarthy loves the double-double, the going into half, scoring, having the ball, coming out. The percentage of you winning that game are through the roof. I get that. But for certain teams, I think you have to change things up. So when they won the toss and they took it, I really like that. Now, of course, they didn't score, but the way that they went down the field like that, I liked it, but I didn't want to hear what you guys had to say.
Well, if you have Lipke hold on to the ball and he's into the end zone, and let's say the Dolphins and the next Cowboys drive end up the exact same as it would have been anyways, a field goal and then CeeDee Lamb touchdown. You're up 14-3, I think completely different ball game. 14-3, and I think you're – and, of course, it's a butterfly effect. If Lipke scores, then you don't know what happens after that because it's a different ball game. But let's say that it does stay the same and he just holds on and crosses the goal line. You're up 14-3 on the road. I think this team with an 11-point lead is a completely different ball club. So I agree with you in this situation, and I think in a situation against, like, per se, 49ers, yes, I would take it against San Francisco. Philadelphia, I think I would rather my defense get out there and get a stop first. It's just kind of a situational basis, but I liked it in this game because – you thought you were going to have to go down and score points and control time of possession. You did so. You just turned it over at the goal line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. News and notes?
Yeah, let's do it.
Practice report coming out of yesterday. So it's a short week. Reminder, the game is on Saturday night this week. So yesterday was treated as a quote-unquote Wednesday here in the building. We could dive into some injury things here. Jonathan Hankins, we spoke to him in the locker room last week. Y'all may have touched on this yesterday when Jerry Jones spoke on the fan, but there didn't seem to be as much optimism yesterday morning as Hankins had last week as far as playing against Detroit. He was listed as a did-not-practice with his knee/ankle injury. We'll see as the week goes on where he's at with that. Tyron Smith once again did not practice with his back injury that kept him out of the game on Sunday against Miami. And then going through some more injury stuff, Stephon Gilmore, he told me in the locker room after the game that he suffered a rib injury during the game. It looked pretty scary whenever it happened initially, just because he was kind of writhing in pain, threw his helmet off really quick, but he was back two plays later on the field. He was on the injury report, but it was for rest reasons. The rib is not on here, so that's a good sign as far as him going forward this week. And then just really quick to touch on some other ones: Rico Dowdle, ankle limited; Brandon Cooks, rest limited as well; DeMarcus Lawrence with rest; Jordan Lewis with rest; Hunter Lipke has a thigh injury. You know, maybe that had something to do, you know.
Right.
He was limited. And Malik Hooker with his ankle injury, limited as well.
Okay. So.
And no major concerns for the Lions either. Brock Wright, backup tight end, hip injury. He was the only one that did not practice yesterday.
So, for the most part, whenever you're looking up and down the roster, it's about the same as what it was last week, which is, I mean, knock on wood, that's great. But Tyron Smith, questionable. Hankins, probably doubtful. And that's what you've got going on injury-wise, right?
Yeah.
Do you think there's a better shot to see Tyron this week? Where would your confidence level meter be?
Right now, I think he plays on Saturday. Mm-hmm. I mean, he hasn't practiced first day of the week at all this season. They're not going to practice him the first day of the week when he's battling something. So I'm not concerned yet about Tyron. Ask me Friday, and we'll see. But as of right now, I think there's a little bit more concern with Hankins, if you're asking me specifically.
What do you think? So Tyron was walking around the locker room yesterday.
Okay.
And so for two things why that stood out to me. One, he was moving better than he was last week during week. And then two is that when Tyron – I'm not saying this is a fact, but there's oftentimes I would see Tyron not being in the locker room at all if he didn't think he was going to play.
Yeah.
Like, just the fact that he walked through there and was at his locker for a little bit, normally you just wouldn't even see him in there. So I thought that was a pretty positive sign. Again, that's just some reading between the lines. But, yeah, I would agree with you. I think he plays in this
game. Of course, the one day I missed, Tyron Smith's at his locker, of course.
Yeah, dude.
I will say, though, I've been covering this team since 2011. if you were to miss a day, yesterday was the day.
Yeah.
In the locker, there was just nothing going on there. It was the least productive locker room day of my entire time covering the Cowboys. Including those times when you go in there after a season-ending loss, you know, for the locker room.
And they get the trash bag.
Usually it's pretty bad, yeah. But no, there was just not a lot of guys there. So that means that today will be very busy. Everybody will be talking.
There's
nothing.
A word.
There's nothing to read into there, right?
With what?
Based off of two straight losses.
Oh no, it's because of the way they flipped this practice.
I just wanted to put it out because everybody at home's probably like, upset. Like, locker room problem. No,
worse than a season-ending loss.
Yeah. No. They flipped these practice schedules, so that's why it's like that. So the locker room availability is early in the morning when. Like guys are either just getting there or all the guys, you don't see everybody at their locker because they don't have to go there.
Yeah.
So that's the reason. It's not because of this loss or anything like that. Because to be honest with you, I thought this loss after the game too reminded me a lot of the Philadelphia game where it was a loss, but I didn't get the sense that it was like, you know, after the Buffalo or Niners game where like we got major things that we need to fix here. And like that.
I'll say this. I think there was a little bit more frustration in the locker room after this loss than any of the other four or five. It was similar to Arizona in that sense where it was like, why did this happen? How did we not come out with a win in this instance? It's kind of like the vibe I felt.
So it's a mixture.
And a little bit of more official stuff.
For sure. But Micah definitely was
on and off the record.
Yeah, absolutely.
I could see that because there's a frustration with, man, they had every opportunity and they let it slip because of the Lipke fumble and plays down the stretch and things like that. Didn't get a stop at the end from your defense. It felt like Dallas had every opportunity to win that game, and they didn't. Mm-hmm. And so I could sense a little bit of frustration. But you're right, from the way that they answered questions and from what we could see from here at the Star and looking at post-game reaction, it was, we can learn from this, but we have a bit of confidence on the road in a loss like this. Not a moral victory, but still something to grow upon. All right, when we come back, we're going to preview the Dallas defense versus the offense of the Detroit Lions. There are some weapons here. Is the speed comparable to Miami? And what do they do well with Jared Goff at quarterback? We'll talk about it when we come back. More Talking Cowboys right after this.
Todd thought it would be secure to jog in the cheetah savanna. Todd believed the big cat repellent he bought online was reliable. And now Todd is trying to be faster than this cheetah that can run 80 miles per hour. But the good news is Todd has AT&T 5G that is fast, reliable, and secure. And he learned the best thing to do is stop running and toss her the backpack with the beef stew. AT&T 5G. Fast, reliable, secure. It's not complicated.
5G requires compatible plan and device. 5G may not be available in your area. See att.com/5G for you for details.
Black Rifle Coffee Company serves premium coffee to people who love America. When you drink Black Rifle Coffee, you are directly supporting veterans, law enforcement, and first responders in your community. Black Rifle's expert roasters love coffee almost as much as Texas loves football, so it makes sense that America's Coffee partnered with America's team. Go online at blackriflecoffee.com and fuel up with the official coffee of the Dallas Cowboys. That's blackriflecoffee.com to fuel up today.
Cowboys fans, after that move, we've just coined the term Rowdy Replay. Let's roll back the tape.
Okay, there's our mascot Rowdy cheering on the boys, and now he's on his phone, on his Bank of America mobile banking app?
Staying on top of his finances with his virtual financial assistant, Erica.
Bank of America's digital tools are so impressive. Cowboys fans just can't stop banking. Learn more at bankofamerica.com/can't stop banking.
Erica is only available in the English language. You must download the latest version of the mobile banking app, only available on select mobile devices. Message and data rates may apply. Member FDIC.
Welcome back into Dear Doctor, the show where I answer life's questions with an ice-cold can of Dr. Pepper. Sheila, let's hear from our next caller, would you?
Dear Doctor, my friend supported me during a tough time, but what's the right gift that says, thanks for being a shoulder to cry on?
Okay, this one's easy. I say, give her a delicious Dr. Pepper. Nothing says, thanks, girl, better than a one-of-a-kind soda. Yes, any Dr. Pepper flavor will do. Now, just a reminder that I don't need to be a real doctor to know that Dr. Pepper is the one you deserve.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for the Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Back to Talkin' Cowboys.
Back here on Talking Cowboys, presented by Black Rifle Coffee Company. This portion of the show is brought to you by Quaker Oats, a super trusted superfood. Quaker Oats, the official oatmeal sponsor of the Dallas Cowboys. Isaiah, did you get them in?
You know what, Kyle?
What?
I did not get them in.
Why?
Today. They weren't cooked to my standards today.
Hmm.
What were you just eating?
They must not have been Quaker.
They were Quaker grits.
They were just.
I would agree with that.
Oh. The preparation was off today.
Yes. A little bit too much water today.
Oh, a little man. Too much water today.
Well, hey, we'll get back at it. We'll get them again tomorrow. We'll get back at it tomorrow.
I'm with that, Kyle.
It's super trusted. Yeah.
Please.
All right. Detroit Lions. 11-4, fresh off their first division title since 1993. Isaiah, where were you in 1993?
Dude, I was nine years old.
9 years old?
Yeah.
Where were you?
11, man. Diehard Lions fan.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. So do you remember that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Did you get the T-shirts and everything? They didn't really do a whole lot of T-shirts.
After they won in 91, after they beat the Cowboys, and that was the first time they had won a playoff game, they had, like, some of the players, like Lomas Brown, Eric Kramer, some of the guys at, like, autograph signing or something like that. So I have a picture of, like, when I was, I don't know, like, 9, 10 years old with Eric Kramer because it was, like, the biggest deal. Because, I mean, to be honest with you, this isn't just a Detroit Lions thing. I mean, you see what the Pistons are going through right now. Yeah. The Red Wings, the Tigers, they've all had, like, the worst seasons like any franchise can have. So when there is any type of like what's going on right now, that's what I'm telling you. There's going to be a lot of Lions fans at the game Saturday night. I mean, like,
yeah.
I got 4 or 5 friends coming down because of the one, you think it's going to be better weather than it is in Detroit.
That's fair.
New Year's Eve. It's a Saturday marquee game and your team is finally good and they're playing another team that's good. So, yeah.
We've talked about that before, too, of with AT&T Stadium being a destination stadium.
Absolutely.
Fans across the NFL want to go to Arlington to see the stadium. And I don't blame them. Every time we walk in there, it's insane. And
there is that. Like, you look at some of the questions that their players are asked. Like, I saw Jared Goff yesterday, like, at the end of his press conference, was asked about the whole, like, so what do you think of the whole mystique of whole, like, America's team, stuff like that? That still lives.
Yeah, it does.
You know, so that adds to it, too, because when you said that, the first thing I thought of was Vegas. That's going to be a destination I see for a lot of teams going forward because they're fans. You can go to Vegas and then see your team play the Raiders. But there is something about Dallas, the Cowboys. If you've never been to Texas, most people, I would think, because I know I was like this, you think of, like, Texas, like, is football, you know? So there is that part of it, too. And then, again, like, you're thinking December, Texas, the weather will probably be decent, especially if you're from Michigan, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, this weather, it's supposed to be cold on Saturday, but it's not supposed to be, like, Detroit.
Yeah.
Detroit cool. That's not happening. But with all that being said, I mean, the Lions have been playing very good football. And the offense, of course, run by Jared Goff. You've got some weapons. David Montgomery, Jahmyr Gibbs at the running back position. Sam Laporta, who was a draft target for the Cowboys, went a little bit too high in the second round for Dallas to even have really a shot at him. At the tight end position, he's had a phenomenal rookie season. Then you've got, like, the trio on the outside of Jameson Williams, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Josh Reynolds, Donovan Peoples-Jones that are out at wide receiver. It's mostly St. Brown and Reynolds that have kind of been the guys this year with this offensive line, too. And the offensive line with Penei Sewell, they don't allow a whole lot of pressure.
This offensive line is really good.
Yeah.
It's kind of the core of what they do offensively. It's why they've been able to run the ball so well with multiple guys in the backfield. Even when Montgomery gets hurt or Gibbs gets hurt, they can throw other guys in there and they still have success. It's allowed Jared Goff to really settle in the pocket and have time. And when Jared Goff has time, we see what he did in the Rams offense, he's starting to do that here in Detroit as well. I mean, they got two guys up front. You could make the argument three guys up front that are Pro Bowl, All-Pro type caliber guys. Frank Ragnow at center and Penei Sewell at tackle, and then the third is Graham Glasgow at guard.
Yeah, this offensive line is up there in terms of what Dallas has had to go up against. But Isaiah, when you look at Jared Goff and the way that this passing game rolls, is it predicated off of the same type of play action, the speed, the motion that we saw from Miami, or is it completely different?
No, it's more simplistic. I think they're running more base concepts offensively, but the one thing that kind of sticks out from the film that I have seen is these guys are patient.
They're super patient. They'll try to push it down the field from time to time, but ultimately these guys are perfectly fine just throwing underneath. If you want to play soft coverage, they will dump, you know, quick pass underneath, and then run the ball. Like they're not in a hurry. You don't get the sense that they're like they feel like they have to have a big play. They are perfectly content on having long drives, and it shows really their maturity and their coaching staff. And that's kind of the sense that I get. Like these guys are mature, they're confident in who they are, and they want to just they like beating you up. Like they like the physical aspect of long drives. Like they take joy in that. So you don't like Miami is more so like yeah they'll run it, they'll beat you up and running the ball, but ultimately they want a big play. Like they love the big play. This team, you don't get that sense. Like they're prime. 15 play drive, cool. like they like it.
It's similar to Dallas in that sense that they want to win the time of possession mm-hmm. battle. And if they win the time of possession battle, then they're content with whatever happens on the following, on the backside of it. So that's probably the biggest thing you look at when both teams are on offense on Saturday.
It's impressive how much they've gotten out of their young guys, too, how much of the impact they've gotten. I mean, just look at this draft class, and I know we're talking about the offensive side of the ball, but Sam Laporta, Jahmyr Gibbs, both key cogs in their offensive attack. First-round pick on Gibbs, second-round pick on Laporta. They also had another first- and second-round pick, and they're on the defensive side. Jack Campbell is your starting linebacker, and then you've got Brian Branch, who's your nickel at the moment, who is a second-round pick. And all those guys are making impacts from this youth, which makes me think that this team has a chance to build moving forward. Oh, yeah. This is only the beginning of the Lions' window of what they're doing, winning football games. And I think, John, whenever you look at what the Lions have done this year, there's an excitement around it, but there's also a bit of an experience there that Dallas could possibly take advantage of.
Yeah, no, there is for sure. And I will say, I mean, it's very popular saying is same old Lions. You're always just waiting for, you know, the bottom to fall out. And so you mentioned that draft, and it looks good right now. But I can tell you, when it was being drafted, there was a lot of criticism of, like, running back, mm-hmm. linebacker, tight end. That's where you're using these premium positions. This is an organization that thought they were going to be ahead of the curve and go Charles Rogers, Roy Williams, Mike Williams at wide receiver and put all these guys around Joey Harrington, and it was a huge disaster. I mean, it led to that 0-16 season that they had. And so to see them actually have success doing this, it makes you feel like, oh, you know, something's different here. This isn't the same old Lions. I will say them building through the offensive line, having those high draft picks, there's just things about the way this team's built that remind me a little bit of the 2016 Cowboys where Dak was NFL Rookie of the Year, but Dak wasn't asked to do what he's being asked right now. Like, Jared Goff's certainly not a rookie, but he's also not being asked to just win these games. It's like, hey, we got a good offensive line, we got a good running game, you got a really good receiver you can count on, Amon-Ra St. Brown. And so the next step is them trying to get Jameson Williams to take, you know, play like a first-round pick. He has got 13 targets the last two games, but that's been like a slow build. It just doesn't seem like him and Goff had been on the same page for a while. And so maybe they're getting there. But no, it is certainly a young team that, you know, that a lot of people are excited about for sure. But to Isaiah's point from earlier in the year, though, a lot of really disappointed people that about the whole not making a move at the deadline, especially when you saw what you had to give up to Chase Young in San Francisco. Because you had Chase Young to this, it takes everything to a next you know, tier. So, but kind of like the Cowboys, they didn't make any real big moves to like shake things up during the deadline when a lot of people are like, let's go for it right
now. It's time for the move. And maybe,
but to your point, I think they didn't because they do think this is just the beginning.
This is the beginning of the window. And I mean, they've got three, you mentioned high draft picks on that offensive line that has been very, very good this year. You got three first rounders and two third rounders. That's it. I mean, everybody is a top 100 pick on their offensive line. That's what they've got. And then they've got some guys behind them that could kind of fill in where need be, just kind of pieces like that. So if they continue to stay healthy, their offensive line is dangerous. And that's going to be something that's going to challenge Dan Quinn and company. But when you look at this defense from the Cowboys side of things and where they're banged up, Nick, do you have any specific spot where Dallas is going to have to bow up against this Lions offense?
I mean, even though the run defense was really strong this past week against Miami, it's another two-headed monster that you have to go up against. So, yeah, it's that defensive interior once again, especially when you factor in – the matchup that Mazi and Neville Gallimore will have this week compared to last week against a reserve and Lester Cotton. And both of those guys were able to win some reps against him and kind of force things to be a little bit array in the middle. Now you're going up against an all-pro center, all-pro caliber center, and it's only going to be more difficult. You got two different style of backs. I think that's also something a little bit different from Miami. You got Montgomery, who's going to be the thumper. He's going to come in right down the middle of the defensive line and make things difficult. And then Jahmyr Gibbs, he's going to be the outside tackles guy, and he's going to make your life hell in the receiving game as well. So it's a multiple game that they run out of the backfield, and that's what I worry about, is this defensive front can't hold up.
What did you think about the interior defensive line against Miami?
I thought they played well, but I think more so the running game and being able to limit that was more of an effect of DeMarcus Lawrence being able to seal off the edges. Micah Parsons did a really good job of that as well, even when he was put back into the second level. And then I have to credit Malik Hooker as well. Yeah. I mean, he's sneakily one of the better run defenders on this team, which is strange coming from the third level. And typically he's coming from that high safety look as well, which is also strange. But he diagnoses those things so fast, and he never bites on play action. He typically knows. It's quite impressive. And so he's been able to make a significant impact in the run game since he's been back, or I guess just the Miami game since he's been back, right?
Yeah. What do you think?
Which part?
About the interior defensive line.
Serviceable. I mean, they obviously took care of business in comparison to the Buffalo game. I think obviously the Buffalo game was mostly the edges that were really soft. Obviously, you missed Jonathan Hankins' presence, but holistically, these guys, they had a relatively good game. But to your point, you know, this is going to be a huge challenge for them. Miami was really efficient, you know, stat-wise coming into the game. Dallas took care of business and met the match. This team is – one thing you know about them is their character is running the ball. Like, that is the ethos of this team is physicality. And if there's anybody outside of Buffalo and outside of San Francisco that is going to test you, it is freaking Dan Campbell. If there's any personality in this league that was going to say, hey – what we saw on film, let's see if that's true. Like, make them prove it. Yeah. Like, this is the guy that's going to say, go, downhill, downhill, downhill. And this game might be over in 60 minutes. I'm one side of the ball or the other. You know, if Coach McCarthy or Dan Campbell, I think both of them are going to try to take the air out the ball and really try to meet physicality with force. And you're going to find out what you have.
You're saying Tony Pollard's going to get more than 12 touches?
I hope, man. I freaking hope. But I think Dan Campbell's definitely going to try to prove a point in this game. I was reading some of his comments and how excited he is about this game and coming to town. And, oh, yeah, and it's the Jimmy game.
Yeah.
He's ready. He's ready. And this offensive line is obviously – they've seen some things multiple times now that they're like, all right, let's see. I mean, it's no different.
Do you think there's maybe a factor here for Mazi Smith? I mean, we've talked about how – there have been flashes, but that's about it from Mazi this year. I mean, he's from Southfield, Michigan.
Yeah, my
he
hope.
He went to Michigan. Yes,
that's my hope.
Can he have something similar happen this week?
My hope.
I think that's my home.
No, I don't know. I don't know what his trigger is. Everybody has a trigger.
Yeah.
Every person walking this earth has a freaking trigger. And I'm hoping that his competitive bug is triggered this week, not only by Detroit coming to town, but also the fact that there's another Michigan boy on the opposing side that might just get a little bit more attention than he does.
Aiden Hutchinson.
Yeah. I'm hopeful that just pushes his easy button and just turns him into the monster that we know he can be, but he just hasn't shown since he's been here.
Hmm. Yeah, and it is funny you say that, though, because I just think of being from Michigan. I'm not a Michigan football fan, but those two guys are just like the face of the turnaround of why like Michigan's in the third straight college football playoff. Like those two guys right there, Hutchinson and Mazi Smith, that like helped change everything for them.
Do you think, or do you remember Mazi maybe being a Lions fan? Did that ever stick out to you, like growing up or anything? I've never asked him that question.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know, from draft process,
or something?
No, I don't. I've never heard him talk about anything like that. Jonathan Hankins, though, last week certainly sounded like this is the game he was targeting. He's from Detroit too. He wants to get back for. And I mean, to Nick's point, there was just a lot of stuff about how he would help out in this game so much if he could play, because he knows that they want to run the football.
Yep.
Oh, Mazi's not a fan of football, remember?
He
only likes hitting
people. Yeah.
That's right. He likes hitting people. Yeah.
That's a good point. I forgot about that.
I was thinking about that the other day. Like, that's a quote from training camp that when it happened, everybody was like, oh, yeah, that's awesome. Like, he's a mauler. And now everybody's kind of, like, thinking about that quote. And it's like, oh, maybe that wasn't.
Yeah.
Maybe that wasn't the best
thing. He was genuine about it.
He was totally genuine. Yeah.
I like hitting people. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay. All right.
Sweet, Mozzie.
Me and Patrick Walker made eye contact with that when he said that. We were just like,
I hope he finds it. I do. I really do. And I haven't given up on Mozzie yet. I still think he can be a valuable piece of the interior defensive line for a long time to come. It just hasn't hit yet. It hasn't hit yet. And like you said, maybe it takes a trigger. Maybe it takes a flip of the switch, and maybe that comes this week against Detroit. Mm-hmm. All right, let's take our second break. When we come back, we have some national storylines to talk about. John Machota's got a couple topics that we're going to hit in a couple moments. What? What'd you just facepalm for?
I know what he's going to talk about.
That's okay. All right, when we come back with more Talking Cowboys right after this.
They say champions are remembered, but legends are never forgotten. United Ag and Turf offers a winning lineup of John Deere equipment built to tackle any challenge on and off the field. Legendary John Deere tractors, combines, residential mowers, commercial mowers, compact construction equipment, Gator utility vehicles, and a full line of golf and sports turf equipment. United Ag and Turf, the official Ag and Turf equipment supplier of the Dallas Cowboys. Visit UnitedAgandTurf.com to find a location near you.
Are you ready to take coffee off your grocery list forever? Black Rifle Coffee Club is here to help. As a coffee club member, you'll get your favorite coffees roasted, packaged, and shipped to your door free of charge on your preferred schedule. Set it, forget it, and never run low on coffee again. Members also get exclusive deals on coffee, products, and discounts from partner brands. Ease your mind and let Black Rifle worry about your coffee supply. Go to BlackRifleCoffee.com to join the coffee club today.
It's the official men's skincare brand of the Dallas Cowboys, Jack Black. And right now, Cowboys fans can get 15% off their $75 order. Plus, because every deal needs a playmaker, your order will include a free 5-piece skincare set and free shipping. The Jack Black Playmaker is four of Jack's favorites and a full-sized intense therapy lip balm. Make a play for the playmaker at GetJackBlack.com/Cowboys with the code CowboysVIP. That's GetJackBlack.com/Cowboys with the code CowboysVIP.
Todd thought it would be secure to jog in the cheetah savannah. Todd believed the big cat repellent he bought online was reliable. And now Todd is trying to be faster than this cheetah that can run 80 miles per hour. But the good news is Todd has AT&T 5G that is fast, reliable, and secure. And he learned the best thing to do is stop running and toss her the backpack with the beef stew. AT&T 5G. Fast, reliable, secure. It's not complicated.
5G requires compatible plan and device. 5G may not be available in your area. See att.com/5G for you for details.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Back to Talking Cowboys.
Back here on Talking Cowboys, presented by Black Rifle Coffee Company. This segment of the show is brought to you by Invisalign, the official smile of the Dallas Cowboys. We've got John Machota, Nick Harris, Isaiah Stanback.
Hi, Kyle.
Kyle Yeomans. John, it's time for some national storylines.
Yeah, we're going to start out.
Are we going to start with the one that Isaiah wants
yeah,
to start
with? Yeah, let's anger Isaiah early in the morning.
I don't want to mess up my day.
All right, well, we'll get through this real quick. So there's a gentleman from the Chargers by the name of Sebastian Joseph Day, a defensive tackle who probably would help a lot of teams run defense. And he was released and free to sign. Well, he was put on waivers. I don't think no one claimed him. So he's free to sign with any team he wanted. Mm-hmm. So it seems like that would be a potential fit for the Dallas Cowboys.
Wasn't he the captain?
He was. He was one of their captains. Yes.
Interesting. Great leader then.
Yes. And so
vocal.
Mm, yeah.
And so he was available within the last few days. And he did not sign with the Cowboys. He signed a one-year deal with the San Francisco 49ers.
Of course he did.
And so the rich get richer, and they have added a key piece, much like they did right before the trade deadline, with Chase Young. So, yeah, Isaiah, what are your thoughts?
How many defensive linemen have they acquired now? Let's think about it. Haven't they acquired an entire starting defensive line as their backup defensive line?
That's just what I think.
Go through it.
Chase Young, Randy Gregory, Sebastian Joseph Day.
Somebody from Philly, maybe?
Talking about Javon Hargrave?
Oh, that guy.
Yeah, was that
Hurd Reed? You're talking like offseason as well?
Just in general, okay. Yeah.
Just in general?
Then, yeah, there's a couple more guys in there as well.
Hmm. I'm pulling it up. Give me 2 seconds. Okay,
yeah, no, so. It's a, yeah.
So they've acquired a starting defensive line as their supplemental defensive line.
Farrell, or Clellan Farrell, whatever his name is, from Las Vegas. Chase Young, Javon Hargrave, Eric Armstead. That was a draft pick. Randy Gregory.
Gregory.
Sebastian Joseph Day.
Gregory Young as your DNs. Okay, and Day and Hargrave as your D tackles, correct?
Mm-hmm.
That's been acquired.
I'm running for 200 yards myself on that D line.
Yeah, that's been acquired. That was added this year.
I'm letting you know
it's over.
That was added a Buffalo this year.
Yeah,
added. That wasn't there on the roster last year.
You know what that makes me think? And I was thinking about this yesterday. Whenever it came down that he had signed with the 49ers, I wonder if there's not a lot of confidence in the group that they have, or if they just love having rotational guys and they want as many bodies as possible up front. Like, I don't get it. I don't get why they need to add so many more. I don't get it.
How does it hurt?
They have.
Yeah. How does it hurt?
If you have a guy like Sebastian Joseph Day that you can't put on the field in a starting situation.
Isn't that a great situation?
I mean, yeah, but like...
Isn't that a great problem to have?
I wonder if it's just because how the physical style they play, usually by the end of this, when you get in the playoffs, they are usually missing some guys because of that. You know, a lot of people like to talk about that physical style play, how it adds up for the opponents and how bad opponents play the following week because of that. I think that they're loading up because they're like, hey, if we need somebody else.
They probably are loading up. I'm not sitting here saying that they don't have confidence. But it's just
I definitely don't think it's a confidence issue. I think it's more so about, hey, guess what? You're great. You're great. How about I just limit you to 15 plays a game? How great could you be then?
I would not say that works for everyone, though.
Not everybody. Exactly.
I think there's a lot of guys that elite of the elites, I think you need to leave them out there. So
I agree. And Bosa's not coming off the field.
Yeah. No.
But when he does, there's a Young and a Gregory that come in.
It is nice. It does sound nice.
And a Farrell.
It's wild.
Yeah. A couple guys like that.
That's all.
Is it Cleveland?
Cleveland?
Cleveland? I honestly don't know
Farrell.
How to say it.
I don't either. I've never been able
that
to
was a
it
very,
out.
That was a very typical Detroit Lions draft pick when the Raiders took him, where it was like the whole, like, I think they took him like 4 or something. It was real high. It was just one of those, oh, back away. We know what we're doing. You're just like, yeah, but you're not really the organization that is usually on the cutting edge in this stuff. You sure about it? I want to say it was
Trubisky.
It might have been John Gruden's first pick
when
he took over his head. It was up there because it was him and Mayock were running that draft. And I just remember when they took him, everyone was just kind of like, "Whoa, that's kind of early there."
I shook my head when I was watching that game the other night, San Francisco versus Baltimore, and when Lamar Jackson had that intentional grounding in the end zone.
Mm-hmm.
Who were the two guys that were chasing him?
Young and
Bosa.
Chasing him. Was it Bosa? I thought it was another guy.
Mm-mm. Bosa and Young.
I know it was Young because he was the one they showed like running off the field.
Yeah.
And the ref. I mean, the ref got in the way, too.
The ref definitely got in the way. So that was embarrassing. But yeah, good talk.
The other one I wanted to bring up was just because we visited this a couple weeks ago, but it was the whole NFC South. If the Cowboys don't win the division, likely having to go on the road to play against the NFC South. And I remember when we talked about it a couple of weeks ago that I was like, oh, out of all those teams, I think you'd most want to play the Buccaneers. Now I'm starting to think that that isn't the one. And so I remember I said the one that I thought was most favorable was the Buccaneers, and that I thought the one that you wouldn't want to go to is the Superdome. But now I'm thinking the Buccaneers might be the last one out of those
three. I might have said the same thing. I think New Orleans was the team that I would much rather face,
right?
But not the environment that you want to go into.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's my case as well, and that's what it was. But now I think I would rather go to the Superdome than face a red hot Buccaneers offense.
Baker
Mayfield. Baker's been balling. I mean, you could joke about it as much as you want. He's been balling.
Yes, he is.
Who'd
you rather face, Nick?
Falcons.
Yeah.
The Falcons. But they would need the Buccaneers to lose one. The Buccaneers control their own destiny. If they went out, then they're in. That's so
nice. Isn't that nice to be in that position?
It's also not...
I mean, the Cowboys are in the playoffs.
I didn't say anything. I just said it's nice to be in that position.
I saw the dig a little bit.
There's
a little bit of that. The Saints would need to win out. The Falcons would need to win out. And they would hope that the Buccaneers drop one at some point. Or drop two, actually.
Falcons have the Bears this week and the Niners next week. Or excuse me, not the Niners, the Saints next week. So they could win out. Falcons could totally win out. The Buccaneers have the Saints this week, and then they have the, where did it go? Oh, the Panthers next week. So they can definitely win out too.
actually, the Buccaneers can lose to the Saints this week
and still be okay
and still make the playoffs. So I guess they only really need one win to clinch the NFC South. It's looking more and more likely that that's going to be the four seed. So
yeah,
man, it's interesting.
Love that. Great.
One other one was the Chiefs and their downfall. I still think they're in the mix. I still wouldn't count them out. Do you guys feel like they're done?
No, absolutely not. Not as long as he's quarterback and young and healthy. And yeah,
with that coach.
With that coach, it's they need a receiver so bad.
Yes, they need
like five receivers actually so bad.
Well, even their safety blanket that has been Travis Kelce. And a lot of people want to make the joke about Travis Kelce and it's Taylor Swift. No, it's the fact that this is year 10 in the league and he's played a physical brand of football forever. And so at some point he's going to see a bit of regression.
And he doesn't have a supporting cast.
You said what?
He doesn't have a supporting cast either.
He has zero around him. Zero. Like, it's not even like a supporting cast. It's like, no. If I would have showed up today and put on the mic and none of you guys would have showed up, that would have been the worst show of all time. I can't do it all by myself.
I think that's another team that historically has not been aggressive in offseason. I think that's going to change for them this year.
I think so as well. I think they move up to get a receiver in the first round, and I think they might even go try to pull a receiver from somewhere. Like, honestly, like a Michael Gallup in KC, who knows? Like, that type Michael Gallup type receiver in KC, that would be fun.
So you guys don't think that – I'm not saying just the Taylor Swift thing, but just his – popularity with everything hasn't been a factor at all.
Distraction to a certain extent.
So, man,
not even a little. They're just not 1%.
Doing well. They're just not doing well.
He was banged up to start the season too. He might not even be healthy.
Yeah,
remember he didn't even start this. They played the Lions at the beginning of the year. That was one thing else I was going to say. Yeah. About the difference between the Lions and the Cowboys. The Lions, like, they're on. Everyone's happy because they're the direction they're heading. But like, if you look at their schedule, if that was the Cowboys' schedule, nobody would be sitting here going, yeah, but the Cowboys get that road win against Kansas City to start the year, because that was a big kickoff to the season for the Lions, where it's like they didn't have Chris Jones, they didn't have Travis Kelce.
Yep.
This isn't the Chiefs team you thought it was. And then they've beaten the Bucs on the road. And if the Cowboys had done that, I don't think we'd be sitting here going, yeah, I understand they didn't beat the Bills or Dolphins, but remember when they beat the Bucs? Like, I don't think we would say, yeah, they went to Tampa Bay and beat the Bucs.
What worries you most about Detroit's offense?
The run game getting going, and then they're just eating clock and keeping Dallas's offense off the field. I think that would be the biggest one. And then Dallas has to play from behind, and then you got Aiden Hutchinson pinning his ears back and that kind of stuff. So I think that if the running game got going, I think that would be the biggest concern.
What about you?
You would love to get in a high scoring game against this team, I feel. If you're the Cowboys.
Yeah. A shootout?
Yeah.
Yeah, I worry about them just eating the clock.
Yeah.
And then playing a physical brand of football on the opposing side. I mean, they took out tight end for the
you're worried Denver. they Buffalo you. Like James Cook, and now it's Montgomery and Gibbs, and it's just boom, 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 down the field.
Yeah, because their style of offense, like they're okay running it 70% of the time
and
throwing it 30. But they're okay with that. Like, they are perfectly fine with that.
Yeah.
And like that, from that sense, how calm they are in their operation, it leaves me a little bubble gutty. Not bubble guppy, but bubble gutty.
You know, you say that, and I agree with you. I think they run the ball very effectively. And whenever they've had Jared Goff held underneath 35 attempts, they're undefeated. Mm. They are 6-0 whenever he's held under 35 passing attempts. So, I mean, a lot of that is cause. Because you're playing from behind, you throw it a little bit more. He's thrown it at least 25 times in every single game this year. All but three, he's thrown it at least 33 times. And he has four games where he's had 40 or more passing attempts. So they will throw it around. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not out of the question either. They've thrown it 40 times against Minnesota in a win, 44 times against Tampa Bay in a win, 44 times against Green Bay in a tight loss, and then he threw it 53 times in a blowout game against Baltimore. So that one's kind of a loss. But they'll throw it around every
once in a while. What would you say their approach was to Dallas last year, offensively?
I don't remember what I had for dinner last night, Isaiah. Dang it.
Do you remember where you were last night?
I do, fortunately. Gosh, I do not remember that game at all.
I'm coming back. I'm getting to it.
I don't remember that game at all.
I just remember the physicality.
It was very, very physical.
That is what I worry about when I look at this game, is because you look at the teams that have been on paper more physical than the Cowboys this year. They've given them issues, even at home. Like, there's been a couple of instances where they've been given issues.
In Dallas, I feel like Dallas matched the physicality this week in Miami.
Absolutely.
I really feel that. I mean,
yeah, but Miami, I don't feel like has
comparable
physicality to Buffalo.
But it's a mentality thing, right? It's a decision to enforce your will. So I'm not going to argue with you on that one. Miami is not Detroit when it comes to physicality, but I like the fact that they matched it, right? Even though it wasn't at that level, they didn't bow down or back down from it. Like, they brought it, right? You talk about Malik Hooker, like, he brought it. You know, D-Law, he brought it. Like, those guys, they had an attitude to them on that side of the ball.
But I think we would all have been surprised if they didn't. Coming off that Buffalo game, the way they played against Miami is exactly how I expected. Because we have a long track record here. Like, when I talk about the Lions, it's a lot more of it is about this season. The Cowboys, this is like a building off of. We're on a third season now of a team making the playoffs, a good football team. And so because of that, it's just a little bit different of a thing where I feel like you can count on, like, well, they just played that game against Buffalo. There's no way they're going to show up this week playing that poorly on their run defense. Mm-hmm. No way. Not with Dan Quinn and this defense. They got too much skins on the wall for that.
Yeah. Last year's game for Detroit, Jared Goff, 21 of 26 passing, but he had two interceptions, no touchdowns. They lost, of course, 24-6, had the two field goals in the first half, and they were shut out in the second half. Micah Parsons had a couple of sacks. Donovan Wilson had a sack. They were running is what they were. I mean, they were running away is what they were doing.
Yeah, for sure.
And that was the game plan.
Retreat.
Survive.
The difference, too, is they had neither of those running backs that they're going to bring to the field on Saturday. There's a lot of weapons on that offense that they did. James Williams, Sam Laporta. I mean, it's a completely different look. It's
Williams was their leading rusher last year. I forgot his first name.
Jamal Williams.
Jamal Williams was their leading rusher. 15 for 79.
To improve their offense this year.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. I mean, that's where you go spend those picks on them.
It is crazy, though, how much this Lions team has turned around, and I don't think enough is said about this, from the day that they traded T.J. Hockenson.
Yeah.
It makes no sense. Because you're talking, they trade Hockenson, and they're maybe like 1-6, 2-6. It looked like you're just waving the white flag or whatever. And they went on this run after it happened, and it doesn't make any sense because he's obviously a good player. Yeah. So, I honestly don't understand it at all, but... That's what I'm saying. Just a different team than they were when they played the Cowboys.
Well, they were 1-5 after they lost to the Cowboys last year. They lost the week after that to the Dolphins, and then since then they've absolutely taken off. They've won. Most of their games since then. After losing to Miami, they won all but two of their remaining games. So what is that? That's 8-2 down the stretch. Yeah, and then of course they're 11-4 this year.
Yeah, 11-4 is.
That's an incredible season. It's an incredible season. It'll be a fun one to see on Saturday.
Is that tied for the best in the league right now? Record-wise?
No. Baltimore is 12-3.
Okay.
Yeah. Best in the NFC. It's tied for best in the NFC. And they've got a chance.
When they played Baltimore, man, that was not even – I mean, that was embarrassing. Like, the Lions just were destroyed by Baltimore. It was during the Cowboys bye week. And that Baltimore did the same thing they did to San Francisco, where you just look at them and you're like, man, maybe this is by far the best team in the league.
Yeah. 38-6 was that final score. It was in Baltimore.
It was a noon game. I remember. It was just bloody from the very beginning.
Yeah.
All right. That's it for us today here on Talking Cowboys. Tomorrow we've got QB Vision. We'll take a look at the offensive preview for the Cowboys offense going up against the Detroit defense. Can the Detroit defense match the physicality of what their offense will bring to the table on Saturday? For Chris Beam, Isaiah Stanback, John Machota, Nick Harris, I'm Kyle Yeoman saying so long from Talking Cowboys. We'll see you tomorrow.
This has been a production of DallasCowboys.com and the Dallas Cowboys Football Club.
How-